All right, so we've started the month of Cheshvan, so I want to discuss Cheshvan. We're almost, you know, last year we began at Kislev, so we're almost full circle, almost there. Cheshvan's a month where we know after the excitement of Tishrei, Cheshvan is, in our minds, kind of a boring month. You know, there's no Yantif, no Shofar, no fasting, and no Sukkah, no Lulav, and not much for us to do at face value. But the truth is, Cheshvan is a month that has a very, very big avodah to it. I want to discuss that a little bit. Just to correct ourselves, you know, the name of the month actually is Mar Cheshvan. That's the actual name of the month. Cheshvan is Mar Cheshvan for short. I believe we say it as Cheshvan typically to avoid mentioning the word Mar, which is bitter. We don't like saying bitter. So we call it Cheshvan for short. But the name Mar Cheshvan itself, where does that name come from? Why would Chazal deem this name appropriate for the month when it has the word Mar inside of it? So some say that the word Mar refers to the rain of Cheshvan. As we mentioned last week, the rainy season begins in Cheshvan, in Eretz Yisrael. And the word Mar in Tanakh actually means a raindrop. Kemar midli. So it could be that the word Mar refers to the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael. The Stechemet actually says something we're all taught as kids, usually, which is that because there's no Yantif in the month, we refer to it as a bitter month, Mar Cheshvan. So that's also mentioned about Cheshvan. But the actual official name is Mar Cheshvan, and that's what we're supposed to say in Shul when you bench Rosh Chodesh. It's written on Ksuvas and other documents. It's written Mar Cheshvan. So don't just Mar Cheshvan. And many Sfarim actually cite the idea. There's a term in the Gemara, Merachshin, which relates to Mar Cheshvan. And the word Merachshin means to whisper. And many Sfarim say that just they quote a halacha. There's a halacha that when one davens, you're supposed to wait afterwards to use the bathroom. And the reason, very, very short, just, you know, a few moments. But the reason is because it says, still merachshin sivvasa. Your lips are still whispering the words of davening. Even though you finished, like, it's still kind of like in your mouth. So you give it a few minutes. You give it, you know, let's say you give it a minute, 30 seconds, a very short amount of time before you go to a bathroom because you don't want to bring that into the bathroom. So many Sfarim say also, Mar Cheshvan is the month where our lips are still whispering from Tishrei. Tishrei is the month which we call Yerach HaYesanim. It's the month of the mighty ones, which Rashi refers to as the mighty mitzvos. During Tishrei, we had so much to do, so many mitzvos, so many days of inspiration. And Cheshvan is a month which we said before is kind of boring on the calendar. But the idea of Merachshin Sifvase means that our lips should still be uttering the inspiration, still uttering the tefillos of Tishrei even into this month. So we're still whispering. That's what we're doing. We're still whispering the whispers of the Yom Nerayim. Yeah.
The red shayas she from the yeshiva, because the son goes to yeshiva, so you saw him on Friday. And it said something about that moving of the lips, mar cheshvan, merachshin.
So that's what I'm saying, that merachshin is the whispering of the lips.
But it said
right.
When you daven, you can also change something bitter into something sweet. You know, he said by davening, you can change things.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying that the mar of mar cheshvan through our tefillos can change.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It said it in the sheet.
I didn't read the sheet.
But,
I read like the highlights. I'm supposed to read the front page with the Dvar Torah on it. Maybe I should. So our avodah this month, as we've explained, is to take the inspiration of Tishrei and kind of extend it out into a month which is totally chol, totally mundane. There's nothing exciting in this month on the calendar. I mean, there's always Shabbos, but besides Shabbos, there's nothing out of the ordinary that's exciting this month. And our job is to take the inspiration of Tishrei and move it into the month of Cheshvan. Now there's many new challenges that arise now. And you know, many of us, when the Yom Nerayim finish, we feel a little bit sad. And we should feel sad, because all these special days are gone. We had, you know, a month and a half of these special days. We had Elul, we had Rosh Hashanah, we had Yom Kippur, we had Sukkot, we had Seder Simchas Torah. And it should be a very exciting period. I mean, there is that like sigh of relief that, you know, the intensity is done. Cooking the meals is over. I mean, we do have that feeling a little bit, you know. But bottom line is that we feel inspired on Yantif. We feel it's a special time. And you look back and you feel a little bit sad that it's gone. And when Yantif ends, we all have that feeling. So I saw a Sefer point out, which, you know, to me it was a chizik. The Sefer said that, you know, even though we're sad when Yantif ends, the truth is, why are we created in this world? It's not for Tishrei, it's for Mar Cheshvan. I mean, Hashem put the neshama in this world to face everyday challenges. It's not so hard to be focused and devoted and growing on Rosh Hashanah. You know, it's always hard, but on Rosh Hashanah, when you're sitting there in shul and you're hearing a shofar, so you feel connected. On Sukkot, and you're sitting in the sukkah, you feel connected. In Yom Kippur, you're fasting, you feel connected. But what happens on a regular Wednesday in Mar Cheshvan? Do you still feel connected or not? And the neshama is in this world to experience not the easygoing, you know, connection to Hashem during Tishrei, but the more difficult, challenging connection in Mar Cheshvan. So really, it's all about what's happening in the regular, everyday, mundane life. It's not about the Yom Nirayim are for us a glimpse of greatness. It's something to refer back to and be inspired by. But that's not our goal in this world. There's neshama in this world to deal with everyday challenges, not just to have a Yom Kippur and a Sukkot. So that's what Mar Cheshvan's about. Now, last week is Parshas Noach. And Parshas Noach is a story of the Mabul. And the only famous, well, we'll talk about a few famous events in Mar Cheshvan, but the most famous event of Cheshvan was the Mabul. The Torah says the Mabul began in Chodesh HaSheni, the second month. Now, usually the second month would have meant Iyar, because we always count months from Nisan. However, the Mabul occurred before Nisan was actually a month. You know, the Mabul occurred after the creation of the world, but not after Yitzchak Mitzrayim. So it's actually a machlokus in the Gemara, but the way we understand it typically is that the Mabul occurred in Mar Cheshvan, because the second month was from Tishrei in that count, because Tishrei is creation of the world, and you have Cheshvan as the second month. So being that the Mabul began in Mar Cheshvan, and we also find that the Mabul ended in Cheshvan as well, because the earth, if you look back at last week's Parsha, it says that all the waters receded and dried up on the 27th of the second month, which is the 27th of Mar Cheshvan. So this is the month, which is the month of the Mabul. It's the beginning of the Mabul, and it's the end of the Mabul. So there has to be some connection of Cheshvan to the Mabul. Why did Hashem Dafka bring a Mabul during Cheshvan? It's an interesting question. Cheshvan's also a month, which many Svarim point out, is kind of set aside for punishment, unfortunately, you know, such as the Mabul. And there's been other different decrees against Klal Yisrael that have begun in Cheshvan. So it is a month which also has this negative aspect to it. So where's that coming from? So I want to discuss a little bit about why it's a month that may have been set aside for punishment, but also talk about what our job is during this month. So number one is that it's the second month of the year. Tishrei, if we count from Tishrei, we're on month number two. So the number two in Machshava, in Jewish thought, is always a number that has some sort of a negative connotation. And the reason for that, it's really based off the idea in Bereishis of Yom Sheni. We know that in Bereishis, every day it says, V'yara Hashem ki tov, Hashem saw that it was good, besides Yom Sheni, the second day, Monday. It doesn't say ki tov on Monday. So why not? So the Midrashim explains some bad things are made on Monday, on the second day. And Yom Sheni was when Gehenna was made, and it's the day when Yitzhara was made, and it's the day where some bad things were made. But again, it begs the question, why would Hashem choose the second day to create all these bad things? So many explain, I think the Maharal probably is the main source for this idea, that if you look at the numbers 1, 2, and 3, you see a very important thought. The first day of creation is Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. And the Torah says, Yom Echad, it was one day, it was the first day, it was one day. And the number 1 is total unity. There's not bad and good, there aren't choices to make, it's clear, it's clarity. One, there's one God, one purpose in this world, that's it. I have no confusion. As soon as you get to 2, well, 2 presents another perspective. There's opposition. There's a second choice to make. The concept of bechira, free choice, means I have 2 things in front of me. I could choose one, or I could choose the other. That's it. So the number 2 represents disparity, opposition, nachlokis, argument. That's where 2 comes from. One person can't argue with himself. 2 people can argue. That's that number 2 is. Avodah Zarah is related to number 2 because it means that there is plurality. There's other powers out there other than Hashem. That's number 2. Number 3 is able to reunite it all together. If I have 2 opposing opinions, and then we're able to settle, that's like that third point that kind of makes the compromise. It brings it back together again. So number 3, in Machshava, the way Maral describes it, is always also a number of unity. So 1 is unity, 1 is 100% clarity, 3 is able to take opposing ideas and kind of reconcile them. The number 2 is the opposition. It's the machlokis, it's the arguing, it's the disparity, it's the avodah zarah, it's the plurality. That's number 2. So the Cheshvan, being the second month of creation, is a month that has that that number associated with it. It's a month where there could be machlokis, there could be avodah zarah, there could be ideas of that oppose the Kadosh Baruch Hu chas v'shalom. The number one has to do with emunah. Hashem is one, and it's very clear. So if you look at it from this way, you know, Tishrei is the first month, and that month is full of emunah. It's a month full of focus on Hashem, full of Hashem's mitzvahs, full of connection. The second month is a month where we have the danger to lose that focus and to look at other things and forget the inspiration we had a few weeks ago and start putting our emphasis in life on things that we shouldn't put emphasis on. So that's the danger of Cheshvan. So the fact that Hashem had to punish the world with the Mabul Mar Cheshvan kind of makes sense, because it's a month where it presents to us opposition, it presents to us other choices other than Akash Baruch Hu. Now, the original name of the month actually wasn't Cheshvan. And Sefer Melachim, the month referred to as Chodesh Bul, Beis Vav Lamed, Bul. Where does that term come from, Chodesh Bul? So some say it relates to Mabul, Mabul, Bul. And you can even say Mem Bul, 40 days of Bul, of a flood, of destruction. So that's one possible source of why it's called Chodesh Bul. The idea of the word Bul also can refer to Bala, is to something to wear out or to decay. And it's a month on the calendar where the leaves start falling, the tree, things start decaying in nature, the winter's on its way. So all the blossoms of the summer, all the leaves that are growing during the summer, all the crops of the summer which were growing and flourishing during Cheshvan, they start to die and decay, fall off the trees. So that's where also where the word bul could come from as well, is this idea of decay. But it was called Chodesh Bul, so it relates to Mabul, it relates to decay. So on our end also, you know, the days start to get colder. You can't tell sometimes out there, but you know, it's over spring. But these do start to get colder. The nature is starting to shut down. You know, as we've gone through the year discussing the months, we've seen how the different progression of the months really impacts us as Klal Yisrael. And as nature is shutting down, so in our calendar also, the calendar is kind of shut down as well. We have this boring month in the calendar with nothing exciting in it. The darkness is starting to set in. Days are getting shorter. The coldness comes in. And it's a time that represents the, we've mentioned before, confusion, galus, lack of recognizing Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the winter represents as a whole, and Cheshvan kind of jumpstarts that all. So it's a month where there's nothing to focus us in on Hashem, because it's a month where the winter's coming, and the winter's a time where it does represent this coldness, this lack of focus on Kadosh Baruch Hu. But with all this being said, this is my main point today. It gives us a very unique spiritual challenge and opportunity. And this is what I really want us to focus on in terms of Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. So as I mentioned before, Yontif ends and, you know, we get sad. Yerech HaYasanim is gone. Now this month of Tishrei, which is called the month of the mighty mitzvos, is finished. And we're cast into a month of darkness, of cold, physically and spiritually, of concealment. We're not in Tishrei anymore. So what are we supposed to do? So Cheshvan is a month which is meant to be exactly as we said. It's meant to be daily life at its peak. Meaning that it's not just like, oh, unfortunately we're missing out on holidays in Cheshvan. It's by design. Hashem put this month here purposely with nothing exciting in it in order to give us that unique challenge. And as we said before, because the real challenge of life is not what you do on a Yom Tov, it's what you do on a regular, everyday, mundane, routine day. That's what the challenge of life is. So Hashem gave us Tishrei as an incredible time inspiration, and then afterwards, put Cheshvan there with nothing apparently to inspire us, and to see, well, how are you going to deal with it? Are you going to deal with challenges right or not? All the commitments you made last month, are they going to stand or not? All the inspiration, can you keep it or not? Can you maintain the inspiration despite the fact it's not the external which is there to inspire you? But that's it's interesting, because some months we talk about Cheshvan as being a boring month. Well, some months don't have any holidays, they just have days of mourning. Teves just has a fast day. You know, Av has a fast day. Tammuz is a fast day. But we don't call those months as bitter months in terms of this sense. And the reason is because even a fast day still makes you focus on Kadosh Baruch Hu. A fast day makes you introspect. A fast day makes you do some sort of, you know, self, you know, investigation of what do I need to do to change, to become better? How can we move beyond this day? So it also inspires you in different ways. Cheshvan doesn't have a fast day in it. It has nothing in it. Because Hashem wants to say, I'm not doing anything on the outside to get you thinking. Are you thinking for yourself? Are you growing for yourself? Are you connected on your own? What are you doing? So I want to look back now at the message of the Mabul. You know, we're in last week's Parsha, but it fits the month. So the Mabul itself carries for us, I think, a very important message. And we're going to take it a little bit, I guess, symbolically, for our own personal purposes. The Mabul, we know, you had, if you picture it, you had one family of tzaddikim on the Teva, and then surrounding the Teva was a world of rishus, of evil, that was totally being destroyed. And they were being protected inside their Teva. Now, it wouldn't have happened, but if you can imagine, falling out of the Teva would be very dangerous. You can imagine the waves, slapping up against the walls of the Teva, and if it were to suck somebody in, it would have killed them. It was a dangerous thing, the Mabul. And the waters of the Mabul, the raging waters around, these waters can be viewed for us symbolically as our life as well. The Marsha explains in Maseches Baba Basra. In the Gemara Maseches Baba Basra, there is a lot of stories which seemed kind of like, we'll call them fairy tales, as it were. There are stories of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, who was a great Amora, and him off on a ship. He traveled to all these interesting places, and these crazy things happened to him. And these stories you may have heard throughout the years in different shiurim, in different places. It's like a whole page of Gemara of these kinds of stories. Are they literal? Are they symbolic? It's not so clear. Could be it's all metaphor. But all the stories begin with Rabbi Bar Chana out there, on the ocean, sailing away in his ship and encountering these like incredible, different, crazy, mysterious things. So the Marsha wants to explain to us, what's the symbolism of being off in the ship in the water? And I think the symbolism he describes helps us understand our lesson from the Mabul in the month of Cheshvan. So he says that the idea of the water, he says it represents, based on a pasuk, it says it's a pasuk in Tehillim, I believe, Mishparecha v'galecha alai avaru. It says, your waves have passed over me. And he says, Dima hakasuv atzaros v'agalus, the Torah compares times of distress and times of galus to waves of the sea crashing around us and crashing over us. He quotes from another Gemara elsewhere as well later on that talks about how a certain Tana was out at sea and he had to hold on to his raft to survive, and it's a very similar symbolism. But he brings several sources to say that in all these stories, the ocean and the waves represent galus, tsaros, distress, challenges, all coming up to try to suck us in. That's the Marsha describes. So what he's telling us is a very important message, very important symbolism, which we can understand in terms of our month as well. The challenges around us, the times of distress, times of sorrow, galus, difficulties we have, even rishayim, they're all compared to the yam, they're compared to the ocean. So last week we discussed water being a very, very important, good sign of blessing. But water also has its negative aspects as well. We all saw what happened in Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma recently, what the water could do. Water could be a very dangerous thing as well. Somebody who's stuck at sea, it's a tragedy. But the power of the challenges around us in daily life, they're immense. And I think it's interesting because, you find many psukim, talking about the power of the water, the power of the waves. We say every single Shabbos, Mikolos Mayim Rabim, Adira Mishpirayam, that Hashem is greater than the sound of the great waters, and He's mightier than the waves of the sea. So on a typical day, you go down to the ocean, and you're enjoying yourself at the beach, you look at the waves, you say, okay, the waves are big, and Hashem is big, I guess, but you don't really see, what's the thing, Hashem is greater than the waves of the sea, what does that mean? Why is that such a great praise of Hashem? And then, Chalanu Litzlan, you look at Hurricane Irma, and you say, now I get it. It's hard to imagine a more powerful force of nature than a hurricane and its waves. If you think about just the way that the world, tornadoes are pretty fierce, but they're not as big as a hurricane, they're not as big as these waves, and they're gone pretty quickly. Earthquakes do a lot of damage, but the size of a hurricane, the power of a hurricane, seems to be, I would think, the most powerful thing on this planet, when you think about it. And the waves and the water that come with it are tremendous, as we've seen, unfortunately, too often this year. So then you say the word, Adira Mishpirayam, Hashem is mightier than the waves of the sea, and you look at those images, you get it. You get what we're trying to describe. But you know, you think about it, it's like a tsunami or something. Well, it could crush a country. You know, it's just a wave, but it's incredible. So you say Hashem is more powerful than that. You say, okay, now I understand what the comparison is that we're making. But there's a sense of the world around us. The world around us are these powerful waves trying to suck us in. There's raging waters. It's filled with challenges. It's filled with rishayim. It's filled with different hashkafas that don't fit the Torah. It's filled with things which try to suck us, you know, suck us away from serving Hashem properly. And our duty is to build that teva to survive. You know, Hashem gave Noah a nice warning and told him, build a teva so you can survive this flood. Hashem warns all of us, you know, you're going to be thrust into dangerous waves around you. You have to build your own teva. So the question is, you know, what's going to save us? You know, if we're dealing with the challenges which are as powerful as waves, as powerful as the ocean, so how are we going to be saved? So I think we can learn this from a different medrash. This is a medrash at the very end of Parsha Shlach, a medrash Rabbah. The medrash is actually based on the Parsha of Tzitzis, which we say every day in Kriya Shema, but it applies to all mitzvahs as well. So the medrash says, it quotes the pasuk we say in Shema, Laman tizgaru vasisem is kol mitzvosai. It's so that a person should wear tzitzis, a man should wear tzitzis, so that you remember and do all my mitzvos. So the medrash says, what does this mean? Mashul echa mushlach osoch hamayim. It's a mashul to somebody who's cast into the water. So you picture, you know, chas v'shalom, somebody is, you know, cast into the sea and drowning. Hoshit hakabarnit esachevel. It says that so the captain of the ship, he tosses out a rope to save the person. V'amar lo, and he tells him, tfos chevel ze biyadcha. Grab this rope, v'yalta, and don't let go. Hold on to the rope and don't let go. Because if you let go, you're going to lose your life. So we all see that image. So it says, "Ach afkach amar lam kosh baruch hu Yisrael." This is what Hashem tells Klal Yisrael as well. Kol zman she'atem mudubakim mitzvos. The entire time you're clinging to mitzvos, as it says, "Vatem advekim Hashem kechem chaim kol hayom." That if you cling to Hashem, you will have life. Hachzik b'musar al teref nitzrei kihi chayecha. Grab onto musar. Don't let go. Guard it because this is your life. So the Medrash says that just like this person cast into the sea needs a rope to save himself from the dangerous waters, so we also have to have our rope as well. We have to have our ropes that save us. What are our ropes? Our ropes are mitzvos. Our ropes are clinging to Hashem. And that's able to save us from the waters around. So if we want to ask the question to ourselves, well, how are we going to deal with the challenges? What do? We have to make sure we have safety equipment, you know, in line. You have to have ropes, you have to have rafts, you have to have those little tubes that the lifeguards throw out. You have to have those things that save you from the waters around. So the Medrash is saying, mitzvos save us. And the words that are being stressed in the Medrash are medubakin. You are clinging to mitzvos. It doesn't mean a mitzvah here, a mitzvah there. It means that I'm always clinging to Hashem throughout my day. I'm always thinking, what's the next thing I can do to serve Hashem? What's the mitzvah that I can do in order to maintain who I am, and to help me, save me from these challenges around me. And that's our role. We have to have those things in life which save us from the raging waters. It's said, the Chassidus Sfarim point out that the word teva could also mean a word, like words of Torah. You know, our teva could be words of Torah. Torah that inspires us, that keeps us focused. There's another Gemara that I have with me that it says that, it quotes it over here. I can't remember who it was, but it says that there was, I mentioned it before, that there was a Tana who was off at sea and the waves were trying to drown him, and it says that he grabbed onto the Dafshel Sfina. There was a plank that broke off his ship and he was holding onto it like a raft, and every wave that went by he would nod his head at, you know, kind of laugh at and say, you know, you didn't get me and I'm still holding onto my raft over here. And many point out that the idea of a daf shel sfina could actually relate to a daf of learning, Torah. Torah learning can help us be saved. Torah learning can help us be focused and keep us afloat in all the waves around us. There's an idea, I think it's from the Zohar, that Shabbos is compared to Tevas Noach. And we can feel it. Shabbos in our week, it's like a teva. The week is, you know, 6 days where we are, you know, we're off at sea and we're dealing with all the challenges. And Shabbos is like our little bubble to save us from those challenges and keep us focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It saves us. There's an idea that a Talmud Chacham is compared to to Noach into a teva. That's also, I think, brought down the Zohar. And the idea as well, the idea of somebody who is totally engrossed in Torah and in Torah thought is able to be safe from these challenges. We mentioned last week how the Zohar calls the Talmid Chachamim Nune Yama, fish of the sea. And now we can take it for a different meaning. You know, the fish of the sea could also mean fish are able to withstand the waters. The fish were saved from the Mabul. You know, the only things saved from the Mabul were the people on the Teva and the fish. So a Talmid Chacham is considered a fish because he can put up with all the waters around. He can survive the dangerous waters. So it's so important for us to have these flotation devices, you know, in life, which can save us from the dangers which are out there. So we have to know, I feel it's important, there's two things to recognize here. Number one is to recognize that society around can be dangerous waters. And number two, to recognize what we need to do to save ourselves. So, and it means that when you go through your day with a focus, when you go through your day clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then the things around you that give you these challenges don't really bother you all that much, because you know you're with Hashem. You know that you're focused on Hashem. You know who you are. You know what your purpose is in this world. And you're holding on to those ropes. As the Medrash described, the mitzvot are like ropes. And that rope keeps you connected up. You know, you could say in this Medrash that the sailor himself who's throwing down the ropes is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's throwing us ropes. The mitzvot are ropes he's throwing down to us. We grab onto them and we stay connected. And therefore, we're safe from the waters around. And we have to identify which things around us are actually dangerous water. Sometimes we get confused and we think, you know, that's actually a safe place to go. And really, it's not. I'm going back to the stories of Rabbi Bar Chana, these what we call fairy tale like stories. So one story mentioned there is that he says he's sailing off on a ship and they reach an island. And they got off the ship and they, you know, pitched their tents on the island and they were settling in and they were cooking and they were having a good time. And the whole thing started to rumble. It started to shake. And they ran back to their ship and got off into the ocean and they realized it was actually a whale. And the whale turned over and they would have all drowned had they not gotten back to their ship. So that's a mashal for many things. But one mashal is, sometimes we think we're on safe land, and we're not. Sometimes we think, oh, this isn't part of the danger of the waters around. This is actually a safe place to be, that where my values can be upheld, and my values can be honored. And really, it's not. And then the whole thing can start, you know, flipping over upon you if you don't run back to your own personal safe place that you have. So we have to always know, you know, what is a place where a Jew belongs, whether, you know, physically or just mentally, and what's not. And we have to have those that ship to always jump back to in order to be saved. So I would suggest, I mean, we can all have our own ropes and our own ships. Everyone's inspired in different ways. Certainly it starts in our homes. You know, having a home where we feel this is a place of ruchnius, a place where I can be who Hashem wants me to be, that's probably square one. You know, our homes are our teva. Our homes should be a place where we feel the influences in our homes are what we need them to be. When I go home, I feel I'm connecting to Hashem the proper way. That's number one. It can come through davening. You know, when we daven, we're connecting to Hashem and we're creating those ropes. It can come through the way we observe Shabbos. You know, if we have a Shabbos that's inspirational and a Shabbos where we feel connected, that creates a teva for us. It can come through many, many things. Everyone has to create their own rafts, their own tevas to survive. So Cheshvan, talking about Cheshvan as a whole, now Cheshvan is a month of the Mabul. That's the way the month, we say Chodesh Bul. It's a month where we're focused on the ideas of the Mabul. So what's the Mabul? The Mabul represents to us in our lives that we don't have, Hashem promises I'm not going to destroy the world anymore in a way like the Mabul. So we don't have destruction, but we have challenges which are symbolic of the Mabul. And Tishrei is a time where it's like we're on top of the mountain, the waters aren't going to get to us. You know, Tishrei, we're all the way on the top, the waters are down here. Okay, so it doesn't bother us. But in Cheshvan, we're no longer on that mountain anymore. And now that the waters are around, we have to be sure that when the Mabul comes in Cheshvan, they're able to deal with it. Do we sink or do we float? You know, do we have, you know, our tools and our flotation devices that we need? Or not. This is to me is the main avoda of Mar Cheshvan. And this is not just, it's not an accident. It's not that it happens to be there's no holidays in Mar Cheshvan. It's by design. So Hashem wants to say, okay, I'm testing you now. You last month, you were so inspired and you made commitments and you wanted to grow and you had a great, hopefully inspirational, uplifting Yom HaNerayim. So let's see, can you put your money where your mouth is? You know, can you put it to action or not? You're going to be thrown off into a month where all you see is boring everyday life. All you're going to have is challenges coming at you. And can you withstand those challenges or not? Now, the chesed of Hashem is that this happens when we're still, we say, merachshin sifase, where our lips are still whispering the words of the rhyme, so we still feel a little inspiration within. But with that, can we apply it elsewhere? So that's one, I think that's the major avodah mar cheshvan, the main thing to focus on, and that's one thing which is a major aspect of this month. Now I want to discuss one other important point of this month, which I think I'll elaborate more on probably next week, but we'll introduce it now. The other major event of mar cheshvan, which many of us don't realize, is that mar cheshvan was a month where they finished the construction of the first Beis HaMikdash. They didn't dedicate it until the following Tishrei, they waited. But construction was finished in Cheshvan. There are sources. So, we have sources that the dedication of the first Beis HaMikdash, we said, was in Tishrei. The second Beis HaMikdash was dedicated in Kislev. Hanukkah was that dedication. What about the third Beis HaMikdash? So, we have sources that say the third Beis HaMikdash will be dedicated in Mar Cheshvan. So right now, this month is this boring month. Nothing's happening in it. There's no special days. But L'Asid Lavo, that dedication will come in Cheshvan. So we have to figure out what special Cheshvan that deserves this dedication. But I want to discuss a different point right now, which is that we say every month corresponds to a Shevet. We've discussed that many times before. So the Shevet of Tishrei, we mentioned last week, is Ephraim. The Shevet of Mar Cheshvan is Menashe. And the Shevet of Kislev is Binyamin. Those are this progression. Tishrei is Ephraim, Cheshvan is Menashe, and Kislev is Binyamin. The three dedications of all three Batei Mikdash are in these 3 months, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev. And what's the common denominator between those three different Shvatim? Can we think of it on the spot? The common between Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin?
You're on the other side of the Arden.
No, not well. Binyamin was, and Menashe was, but not Ephraim Binyamin.
They're Rachel's children.
Rachel's children, very good. They're all Rachel's children. So it's in the months of Bnei Rachel, that's where we have the Beis HaMikdash dedicated. So obviously Rachel has something to do with the Beis HaMikdash because we dedicated it in her months. So the question is why Rachel? Now, what was special about Rachel? Yeah, right. There's the Cheshvan also, which I guess another famous day in Cheshvan beyond Rachel Minos Yortzai. But what is it about these? Why does Rachel deserve in the Shvatim that came from her, their months merit the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash? So this actually goes back to a deeper concept to compare Rachel and Leah. And this becomes the parsha in a few weeks, so we'll already be prepared for it. You know, Rachel and Leah, the two of them, you know, they were sisters, but they were very different in many ways. Our introduction to Rachel and Leah, we know that Rachel was Yifas Torah, Yifas Mareh. She is beautiful in her shape and in her look. And Leah was an Erakos, it says. She had soft eyes. Leah's eyes were soft, Chazal teaches, because she spent so much time crying over her destiny to marry Esav. And Rachel had things, you know, easy, so she still looked beautiful and nice, and you know, nothing caused her to look weary, look haggard in any way, because she had a very easy life. That seems to be the simple description. The word Rachel means a sheep, and Rachel, the sheep gives us wool. We make clothing out of wool. That's our externals. Externally, she looked beautiful, and her name actually seems to imply the externals. The wool was what clothing was always made out of, and to this very day, nice clothing we have made out of wool. Leah, the word Leah, the word in the Aramaic for like being worn out, being weary is Leusa, Leah, same word, La'a. And because Leah was someone who was very worn based on her difficulty she had. You know, she had a difficult life, she had a difficult destiny, she had to dive into Hashem to help her from her destiny to marry Esav, and a lot of time crying. So Leah was somebody who, her essence was, she was kind of worn out on the outside. Rachel was beautiful on the outside. But Leah's beauty was only on the inside. Leah had a lot of Inea Rakos, her soft eyes were a window into the beauty of her soul. She was very beautiful within. Not that Rachel wasn't, but Rachel's beauty is manifest externally, whereas Leah's was only internally. We have, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, there's many many makomos hakadoshim, many holy places, but two cities that stand out in the Torah are Hebron and Yerushalayim. Now Hebron is the makom where we have Masach Pela, where the Osim Malchus are buried. Yerushalayim is where the base of Mikdash. And both are places of tefillah. Kalev went to daven in Hebron. We know Yaakov daven on Har Abayis. And we daven in both places. If you've ever been to either place, there's places of tefillah. Very, very important places of tefillah. They're very different. Now Hebron, where is the Kedusha of Hebron? It's buried within the ground. Very, very deep. Where the Osim Malchus are buried. The Kedusha comes from the graves, which are buried deep in the ground. It's Marasa Machpela. It's a double cave. It's a cave within a cave, and then you have the Kvarim way down in the ground. It's like very, very deep down. The Beis HaMikdash is Har Abayis. It's a mountain, and it's high up, and it's visible, and it's out in the open. And there's a big contrast between the two. Even though they're both places of Tefillah and places of Kedusha, Beis HaMikdash was a place where you see the external beauty. Beis HaMikdash is a place where you see Hashem showing His external love to Klal Yisrael. Whereas Hebron's a place where the beauty is internal. So it fits very much that, you know, Hebron was a city that belonged to Shevet Yehuda, which was a son of Leah, and Yerushalayim was really split, but the Kodesh HaKadoshim was in Binyamin's chelek, it was in Bnei Rachel's chelek. You know, Binyamin had the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it very much fits these two. Rachel had the external beauty, Leah had the internal beauty. Leah had Hebron, Rachel had the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You know, that's how the two go together. You could even add in further. I saw Sefer Musi Techlek points this out, that there's a reason Hebron was never the Makomos HaKadosh of Hebron were never destroyed. You can't destroy Masach Pela. It was never destroyed. It's not destroyed. It's there. But Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, unfortunately, and the reason is because the Hebron represents the internal beauty of Klal Yisrael and the deep love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael, not the external display of that love, but the internal feelings. So those feelings will never be destroyed. Hashem's love for Klal Yisrael, as we've mentioned before, is eternal. And even though sometimes we don't see it on the outside, on the inside it's always there. So Hebron never gets destroyed. The Kedusha of Hebron is deep in the ground. That represents B'nai Leah's inner beauty. And that remains. This Mikdash is external beauty. Hashem sometimes displays His love for Klal Yisrael. Hashem will do miracles for us. Hashem will give us special privileges which are apparent and seen in the world. But that sometimes, unfortunately, we don't have. That could be destroyed. So Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and Hebron was not. So if you think back to these months, the very fact that it was the months that belonged to Rachel Imenu, to her children, those are the months of the Beis HaMikdash's dedication. It fits very much because the Beis HaMikdash is the place of the external beauty of Klal Yisrael, the external love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael. It's the where you can see the love, where you can feel the love. Whereas so during those months belong to Rachel, therefore we dedicate this mission to those months. The Hebron, the B'nai Leah, so that's something which is never destroyed, doesn't need dedication, it is what it is, but that's eternal. But that's there, that's the internal love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael. And it's a beautiful thing. The Baal Tanya, he actually differentiates between two terms that we use in davening. There's Avas Olam, and Ava Rabba. And night in Maariv, the term is Avas Olam. In the morning in Shacharis, we say Ava Rabba. Those who daven Nusach Sfar, they say Avas Olam, I think, in both places. But Ashkenazim say Ava Rabba in the morning and Avas Olam at night. So the Baal Tanya explains, well, how do you define Ava Rabba, abundant love, versus Avas Olam, eternal love? So we're saying there's abundant love and there's eternal love. He says a beautiful thing. He says that Ava Rabba is the love which is displayed externally. It's where the abundance of love is shown and it's displayed and it's seen. Avas Olam, eternal love, is something which is deep and it's always there, but it's not always on display. So you could picture in relationships sometimes, whether it be husband and wife, a parent and a child, in relationships, sometimes the love is displayed externally, but the internal love is always there. That's something which, whether you're displaying it or not, the love is there. Avas Olam is always there. Avarab has to be shown, has to be displayed. So you have these two things. You could say Rachel represents the Avarab, the abundant love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael, whereas Leah represents the Avas Olam, the eternal, internal love for Klal Yisrael. And that's there. So if we were to answer the question, why is the Beis HaMikdash dedicated always during these months, Tishrei, Cheshvan, and Kislev? That's because they belong to Bnei Rachel, and Rachel represents that external love and beauty which the Beis HaMikdash represented. So in Mirtz Hashem, next week, I think we'll discuss more why Cheshvan is the third Beis Hamikdash. We'll talk about that one. But this is the intro to that. So just to review what we said, Mar Cheshvan is a month where, number one, the word Mar tells us about the rain of the month, but number two, about the lack of Yom Tov in the month. But that's there by design, in order so we can have the challenge needed to see, is Tishrei going to actually work for us? Does our growth in Tishrei stick with us throughout the rest of the year? It's the month where the Mabul began and it also ended, because it's a month where we have to sense the Mabul around us and sense the challenges we have with the raging waters of society and which try to pull us away from serving Hashem. And our major avoda is, can we develop the proper tools and the safety devices, the floats needed in order to fight against the Mabul around us? So that's that. So even though Mar Cheshvan might be boring on the calendar, it is a very challenging month spiritually. If we want to maintain the levels we achieve in Tishrei, we have to really embrace Cheshvan and do a lot of hard spiritual work and focus to make it actually as successful and as inspiring as Tishrei was.
Very nice.
Any questions? Thank you.
Yeah. A quick question.
Yeah.